A year after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Kyiv and Moscow vowed to keep up the fight.
President Zelensky today said that last year was the year where we did not suffer defeat, and this is the year where we will achieve victory.
President Putin is making it clear that Russia is digging in. Russia is in this for the long haul.
Plus, China urges an end to the war and calls for peace talks, and Boeing halts deliveries of its 787 Dreamliner. It's Friday, February 24th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Ukraine on Friday marked the one-year anniversary of the Russian invasion, celebrating the nation's resilience against a much more powerful enemy. In the capital, Kyiv, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky handed out decorations to soldiers and presented unit flags to commanders of newly formed brigades. Poland's prime minister and other high-level foreign delegations flocked to the city for the commemorations. While Ukrainian officials have warned of possible Russian missile salvos today, the morning was relatively calm with no major developments in Ukraine's skies or on the front lines in the east. After a year of fighting, Western officials estimate about 100,000 Ukrainian soldiers have died or been wounded. Several thousand Ukrainian soldiers are also missing, with one Ukrainian official putting the figure at more than 10,000. Russia has also suffered immense losses in the war. The official death tally, published by Russia's Ministry of Defense, is less than 6,000 and has not been updated since last September. However, Western officials estimate that Russia's casualty count could be as high as 200,000, of which 40,000 to 60,000 have been killed. China has made a fresh call for a ceasefire in Ukraine, as well as peace talks to end the one-year-old war. In a 12-point document issued this morning, China's foreign ministry called for stopping sanctions against Russia, though it appeared to offer a veiled warning to Moscow not to escalate the conflict with nuclear weapons. Today, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and other senior officials are set to address the war at the United Nations Security Council in New York, a day after 141 U.N. member states called on Russia to withdraw from Ukraine. The U.S. is expected to announce sanctions on scores of Russian individuals and entities. The United Kingdom said this morning that it would place export bans on all items Ukraine has found Russia using in the battlefield to date. And European Union member states, meanwhile, are meeting today in a bid to finalize a package of measures aimed at restricting more than $11 billion in Russian imports, including products that can be used both on and off the battlefield. Coming up, we will stay with the war in Ukraine with reports on the mood in Kyiv and in Moscow as the war enters its second year. That's after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
On this day a year ago, Russia launched its invasion of Ukraine, and here is how we broke the news. War in Europe as Russia attacks Ukraine.
It does seem possible that Russia's goal is to make its way to Kyiv, the capital, in order to take over Ukraine.
That was The Wall Street Journal's Brett Forrest, who was hunkered down at his hotel in Ukraine's capital.
Everybody was woken early this morning with Russian missiles and airstrikes. Everyone here is shocked. Everyone here knew that this might be coming for months. It was predicted and discussed. And now that it's here, it's very hard to fathom. There aren't many folks on the street. And while there's not a lot of action at the moment here in the capital, there is a sense of foreboding that that may change and that Russian forces are headed this way.
A year after that dispatch from Kyiv, let's return to Ukraine's capital today to get an update from the journal's chief foreign affairs correspondent, Yaroslav Trofimov. Yaro, thanks for being with us. Could you describe the mood in Kyiv today?
Well, it really couldn't be more different than the mood a year ago. I was there in that hotel basement with Brett exactly a year ago, the morning of February 24th. And the city was under attack. You know, a few hours later, Russian air assault troops were dropped just outside Kiev and the shelling of the city started. The Ukrainian capital has survived that. The Ukrainian forces have repelled the initial military assault. And then more recently, Russia tried to turn lights off in Ukraine and in Kiev by bombing the country's electricity infrastructure. That too has failed. So it's a mood of defiance, resilience, and really celebration in some ways of the fact that Ukraine hasn't just withstood this assault by a much more powerful and bigger neighbor, but has been able to push back and has since then reclaimed about half of the territories that Russia captured early in the war. Today, President Zelensky started off by reminiscing about all these events in his speech to the Ukrainian people and also noting the very grim toll that Ukraine has paid. You know, tens of thousands of soldiers and civilians have died. Cities have been razed to the ground in the east and kind of making it very personal. He said that, you know, every Ukrainian now has in their phones a contact of someone who will no longer be able to respond to calls or to messages. And the Ukrainians will not forgive or forget.
Yaro, it sounds like a country that's been profoundly changed.
Oh, it's going to be a different country, yes. It's a country that believes in itself. It's a country that is determined to regain all of its lost lands. And it's a country that has really come together to confront this disaster and this common enemy. And by doing so, by showing this courage and resilience, has really earned the sympathy of much of the world, as we see now by, you know, the growing support for Ukraine, in at least in the Western countries that have dramatically ramped up the military aid in recent weeks.
Take us to the front lines. What is happening on the ground now?
Well, Russia has been able to stabilize the front lines after its massive mobilization in September, and they have tried to renew their offensives. They haven't had really much success. So if you look at the map, since July, there is only one pretty small town that Russia has been able to capture, the town of Solidar. Russian forces have been trying since then to take the city of Bakhmut in eastern Ukraine. So far, they have not been successful. Ukraine, on the other hand, is preparing for a major counteroffensive that it plans to launch in the spring. Thousands of Ukrainian soldiers are training in Western Europe on the tanks, armored personnel carriers, infantry fighting vehicles, artillery systems, and other weaponry that the U.S. and allies are providing as part of the latest aid packages. And so there is a determination in Ukraine to do regain these lands, hopefully this year. And that was the message from President Zelensky today. He said that, you know, last year was the year where we did not suffer defeat, and this is the year where we will achieve victory.
Does Ukrainian leadership feel they are receiving enough support to carry out those goals that you just described?
Well, obviously, the Ukrainian leadership always wants more. It's natural. And there is, behind the veneer of gratitude, there is also bitterness, because all these weapons that are being supplied now were denied to Ukraine, you know, 6 months ago. And would probably have made much more of a difference last summer when Ukraine was beating out and losing ground. But still, they're obviously very happy to take what they get. And hopeful that this will be enough to change the balance of power in the battlefield.
So, Yaro, what are the options now for Ukraine?
Well, I mean, as far as the Ukrainian government is concerned, and, you know, 87% of the Ukrainian population, according to opinion polls, the only option is to keep going forward and to retake land within Ukraine's internationally recognized borders. How far will they be able to do? Will they be able to go not just beyond the lines of a year ago, but also to take Crimea and the parts of Donbass that Russia had controlled since 2014, remains to be seen, of course.
That was the Wall Street Journal's chief foreign affairs correspondent, Yaroslav Trofimov, in Kiev. Yaro, thank you so much.
Yeah, great to be with you.
And let's turn straight away from Ukraine to Russia, where I'm joined by the Wall Street Journal's Moscow bureau chief, Anne Simmons. Anne, hello. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, Luke.
It has been a week of speeches and commemorations there from what we can see overseas. What tone has President Putin been setting about the war at this 1 year mark?
Well, you know, President Putin is basically making it clear that Russia is digging in. Russia is in this for the long haul. In all of his recent public addresses, he has sought to justify the invasion a year ago of Ukraine. He says that it was necessary because Ukraine and the West were preparing to attack Russia, so Russia was compelled to move first. He has also depicted the war in Ukraine as an existential fight. And pro-Kremlin analysts have said that Russia can't back down now because the Kremlin basically does not trust that the West will stop its actions if Russia pulls back.
What is the domestic situation in Russia now, Anne, economically, politically?
It's interesting because if you're in the big cities, in Moscow, the capital, or St. Petersburg, Russia's second city, you'll notice that life kind of continues as normal. Restaurants are open, shops are fully stocked with food. Prices have crept up a little, but not extortionately, that people cannot afford to buy the staples. And Mr. Putin has put a positive spin on the economic outlook. While he has admitted there have been challenges, he uses most opportunities to tell people that it's actually the West that is feeling the pinch from their own sanctions with rising energy prices. Meanwhile, the Russian government has actually been trying to help cushion the blow to average Russians by distributing subsidies to families with children, families of those fighting at the front. So a lot of attention has been paid to ensuring that people do not suffer socially. If you look at the polls, you will see that the majority of Russians still in fact support Mr. Putin, whether or not they support the actual war. Many analysts will say the reason why people support the war is that they have no choice because there is repression here. You can be jailed or fined, for example, for saying, commenting, writing anything that authorities feel discredit the Russian military, for example. So right now, only a small number of people are actually willing to speak out. We've had some of the leaders of women's wives and mothers of soldiers groups willing to speak out. But in general, there is a certain level of fear here that, you know, it's better to keep silent than to speak up and risk having all of your life taken away.
And let's talk about Russia's standing abroad for a moment. Has it got any friends left? And if so, what can they offer it at this point?
Well, Belarus, in fact, is Russia's closest ally. The president of that country, Alexander Lukashenko, allowed Russia to launch part of its invasion of Ukraine at the start of the war from Belarusian territory. The other big player in terms of Russia's partners is China. The partnership between Russia and China has actually deepened since Russia's invasion of Ukraine a year ago. This, of course, has troubled many Western officials. It's also noteworthy that many African nations and many countries in the developing world have remained relatively neutral on Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
And finally, Anne, what options does President Putin have going forward?
It's really difficult to say at this juncture because reading Mr. Putin's mind, of course, is not possible. However, we do see that there is an offensive going on. And Mr. Putin has actually hinted at the fact that he could use nuclear weapons if pushed to that. Mr. Putin has also promised to increase and strengthen Russia's nuclear arsenal. And that, of course, has caused a certain level of anxiety. The other concern for ordinary Russians, for many ordinary Russians, is that there may indeed be another military mobilization, although the Kremlin has said that those plans are currently not being discussed.
That was the Wall Street Journal's Moscow bureau chief, Anne Simmons. Anne, thank you as always for the updates.
Thank you.
And for more on the war today, check out our sister podcast, Tech News Briefing. On this morning's episode, the Journal's Stephen Fidler joined host Zoe Thomas to discuss how smartphones have made Ukraine the most intensively documented conflict in history. In other news today, we are exclusively reporting that Boeing has halted deliveries of its 787 Dreamliner jets because of a documentation issue, according to the Federal Aviation Administration. An assembly pause of new jets announced by Boeing last week has now been lifted, but documentation issues discovered in the past week have led Boeing to halt deliveries pending a resolution. Boeing confirmed the halt and said it didn't expect its full-year production and delivery guidance to be affected. Speaking in his parliamentary testimony, the next governor of the Bank of Japan, Kazuo Ueda, said he expects inflation to fall and doesn't think an interest rate increase is needed. Wall Street Journal financial markets reporter Anna Hertenstein has more.
This is a real shift from Japan's decades of stagnation, which has led a lot of investors to bet that the Bank of Japan will have to make major changes to its ultra-loose monetary policy. But today we heard from the nominee, Ueda, who said that his view is very different from this. He said that he expects inflation to fall below 2% by the middle of the next fiscal year. And he also said that he's observed that the pace of import price rises has started to slow. So because of this, he doesn't think that an interest rate increase will be needed. These were Mr. Ueda's first extended remarks since his nomination. So to a lot of people, they were the first look into his views. And I think to a lot of people in the market, this will be a surprise.
Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba has reported lackluster sales growth for its October to December quarter, highlighting the financial toll of China's COVID control regime and pressure from competition. Alibaba's quarterly revenue rose 2% from a year earlier, but was slower than the 3% expansion in the prior quarter. Alibaba's chief executive said that he sees 2023 as a year of progress for the company, which is emerging from a two-year regulatory crackdown. And on tap for today, the U.S. Commerce Department is set to release household income and spending figures for January, along with its Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, a gauge of inflation closely watched by the Fed. And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.